Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we break down movies all in one take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
How's it going?
It's going well. I'm very excited to talk about this.
We're late. Like, it's just like we're already late. Like, the whole internet has done it.
They have.
The movie came and went. In a wild flash, because this is the sequel to a billion-dollar movie, and it feels like you went and saw this, what, two nights ago, and the theater was empty?
Yes, it was on, okay, I went to see it on Monday night, after, this is the Monday after it opened, and it was a 7:45 showing. It's not like it's really that late. I mean, Monday doesn't have a lot of people, but for every other Monday showing that I've seen, there's been at least five other people, right? And this is usually a week or two or three weeks after it's opened. There was literally no one. There's no one in the theater. And I'm like, okay, well, somebody will show up once, you know, after the trailers or in the middle of the trailers. No, nobody was there. Like, I was there, and then all of a sudden the cleanup guy like came in to check to see if anybody was in there.
Maybe like, no, if he could I'm leave gonna early. Watch
I'm
it.
Here. Don't worry.
No, I'm watching it.
So it was weird,
I do a podcast and I have to watch it.
Yeah. This is for my job. This is for my podcast.
Oh my goodness. That's so actually crazy. It really speaks to the power of aggregators in the current film industry that like this, again, this is a billion-dollar movie. Joker, Todd Phillips' Joker is a billion-dollar movie. The reason why they made it, it was a movie that never planned on having a sequel. The reason why Joker Folie à Deux exists, that's what we're talking about today, by the way, if you didn't see from the title of the episode, Joker Folie à Deux. But the reason why the movie exists at all is because of how much money the first one made. And the reviews were so bad that you saw this movie Monday, October 7th. It opened Friday, October 4th, and theaters were empty by Monday.
Yes, they were empty. I think you're totally right. This does show like the influence that people do have on moviegoers. But I think this one is a little bit more skewed because it's based on a comic book character, and the people were expecting something. So, I mean, you have a huge group of people who love the comic book character, and then you have a huge group of people that just loved the last movie, and it didn't seem to please either of them.
Right.
And I mean, we'll get into it, but it's kind of, I mean, this one was at a little bit of a disadvantage because you have history behind this character. And history, not a lot of history, but more history behind the movie too. I mean, Joker was a movie that a lot of movie people liked because it was done very well. Everything was Joaquin Phoenix did amazing. He won an Academy Award. So it kind of appealed to those people too. And it just isn't hitting with either of those audiences.
You'd still think though, that with a movie that size, with an IP that size, with those stars, that even with bad reviews, there would be enough audience members that would be like, well, I still have to go see it. Yeah. That's a movie that for me, it was like, whatever the Rotten Tomatoes score is, I'm going to be buying a ticket to see it. Like, it's just one of those movies where I'm like, I'm going to, not only because we have a podcast where we talk about movies, but like, that's just a movie where I'm like, I will be seeing that movie even if it sucks, just because that's my sort of commitment to the Batman IP and to those characters and to, you know, like so it's, I'm surprised that there aren't more people who are saying, even though every YouTube video I see about this movie and everything I can possibly find on the internet seems to say it's the worst movie ever made, I gotta go figure out what is so bad about it.
And this is one of the first movies where it seems like everybody's just taking what everybody else says and like, no, I don't even want to see it. Because usually, like, I agree with what you're saying. Like, even if it's a bad movie, if it's one that I've wanted to see, I want to make up my own mind. I want to go see it and figure it out, which I'm glad I did with this movie. But this is like, people are like, no, I'm not even going to go see it. I don't even care. It's kind of crazy. I've never seen it before.
Yeah, especially for something like a character as big as Joker. Our last episode of the show, we did Joker Mania. We talked about the gravity of this character and like how big this character is. I mean, like we talked about the movie Suicide Squad, David Ayer's Suicide Squad. That movie had a lot of hype around it because it featured the Joker. It was the first on-screen iteration of Harley Quinn. You know, you had all these like characters that had not been brought to the screen before, and like I mean, gosh, the early reviews of that film were like, this thing sucks.
And, yeah.
And I still think that, I think the Monday after opening weekend, there were still sold out theaters for Suicide Squad. I can't be sure, but yeah. I think that, you know, it seems to me like that was still a movie where people were like, well, I got to go make up my own mind. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm wondering now how much Suicide Squad made. Whatever, I'll figure it out later. But yeah, people wanted to see that movie regardless.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. It's kind of strange.
I will say this before we, because so this is a podcast where we do break down the plots of films. So spoiler alert, if you have not seen Joker 2 Folia Deux, we do go through the entire plot of the film and we will be going through a lot of the aspects of the plot of this film. I just want to say I have watched a bad amount of content about this movie.
Okay.
In just the last 5 to 6 days. Like I've watched a lot of videos, mostly because, and I think this is what's going to be interesting about our conversation. My expectations were non-existent. They were in the gutter, especially because I saw the early reviews coming out of Venice. And then I saw the early score leading up to the opening weekend. I saw this on Saturday and everything I had been seeing online was this is unbelievably bad. So I was sort of preparing myself for like, you know, how bad could it be? And thinking I'm going to be watching something that's like Argyle or Madame Web levels of bad. And because of that, I kind of sat in the theater and the entire time I was watching the movie, I kind of just went like, I can definitely criticize this film. There are definitely things that I could point at and say that could have been executed better, and I can absolutely see some of the stuff that people are saying about it. But I was like, this to me on just a technical level, it's like, well, this is some of the best cinematography that any movie that's come out this year has. Yeah. It looks gorgeous. The lighting's incredible. The production design's incredible. Joaquin Phoenix.
The score was great.
The score is great. Joaquin Phoenix is doing his thing. Like he does not miss a beat in this character performance. So I was kind of like, you know, with all this stuff going for the movie, I can't watch this and go, wow, what a piece of crap. I kind of am like, I'm surprised at the level of vitriol. And that's why I've been watching so many YouTube videos about it. Cause I'm just like, well, people really, really hate this. And I think it is about what you said, where it's the expectation was just so high.
Yeah.
And the way that, I mean, I don't think I've ever really appreciated just how much people like that first Todd Phillips movie. And maybe that's the other thing is like that first Todd Phillips movie to me has always been kind of a frustrating watch. And we covered that in our last episode. You know?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, and this is I totally agree. And I kind of went into it I had low expectations as well, but I kind of figured like, you know, I think this is going to be good. I just think it's not what people want.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I got. And you know, it really is there are some parts in this movie. There are a couple scenes in this movie that I'm like, this is genius. Like this is amazing. Like I was blown away by like for sure two parts that I really liked, and it was like this is, you know, it's all great. But the thing that, and I've only watched a couple because I know that a lot of people are getting mad at it, and it's a really well-made film technically.
Yeah,
but it is not, and this is where I lie on the movie. This is not what I wanted, and it's really confusing. Like it's really confusing why he's doing the things that he's doing. And I mean, we'll get into it more, but I just kind of was frustrated. Like that doesn't make sense. Or why didn't you do it this way? Or why didn't you, especially with the musical? I knew it was a musical, and I thought that was the best choice that Todd Phillips could have made, is to make a musical. I was like, oh, that's awesome. That's perfect. I totally see where you're going with that. Like, it makes sense in my head that the Joker would just kind of make this musical.
It's also this version of the Joker, this Arthur Fleck character. It's been established in the first film that we live a lot in his fantasy.
Yes,
that
exactly.
The first film, several scenes in the first film take place inside of his head.
Yes.
And, you know. And so
I was excited for the musical aspect. You have Lady Gaga. I'm like, that's awesome. But they did not lean into the musical enough, in my opinion.
Well, it's like, you know, kind of fundamentals of musical theater. It's like yes. a good song in a musical should do one of two things, ideally both things. Yes. Either it should serve to advance the plot, or it should serve to deepen your understanding of that character and enrich exactly. that character. Ideally, you're doing both. You're giving deeper insights into the psyche of the character while advancing plot. These songs mostly just serve to give insights into the emotional world of the characters, but they're not really insights that are telling us things we don't already know, and they pretty much never advance the plot. They almost always serve as a break from the plot, which the plot of the film is quite thin. And
it is. Most of it deals with the last movie, which we already knew about. So,
yeah.
And it is, and I totally agree. Like, you should be the musical. The nice thing about the musical, which you don't really get a pass on for other movies, is you can express how the characters are feeling through song. Like, that's, and if you make a good song, you can kind of like, here's how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
If you do that in a narrative movie that's not a musical, it's cheap. You can't, you know, like, oh, why is the character telling me how I feel? Like, no one would ever do that.
Yeah.
But since it's a musical, you're like, I think about Little Mermaid, you know?
Sure.
And like, she sings the first opening song, is she tells you what she wants in the whole song, you know?
Yeah.
This is what I want. And that's in musical. That's what Moana, everything. They kind of just tell you what they want, which is a great way to express
They literally call it in musical theater, they call it the I want song.
Yes,
they
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, this is the, and so we don't really get that here. It just kind of is like, here, like, you already know what their emotional state is. And then the song just kind of like, I don't, it just goes into it, but it doesn't, it maybe heightens it a little bit, but not enough to where like, oh, I'm understanding something way more deep about this character.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like you said. So that was a really frustrating part. I really wish they would have written songs for the movie as well.
I think that the word frustrating is how I describe both Todd Phillips Joker movies. I think that's what differs for me from a lot of the videos that I watch is most of the videos that I've watched and most of the people that I see responding to it, they regard 2019 Joker as a cinematic masterpiece, that it is a seminal work of cinematic masterpiece, not only in the comic book genre, but in the drama genre.
Yeah.
And they view that movie as like, you know, cinematic gold. To me, it was always a frustrating film for the reasons we talked about in our last episode, where it's a movie called Joker that's set in Gotham City with characters that are familiar to the Batman universe, but the movie is just about this fictional character named Arthur Fleck. And I'm constantly torn between two opinions of the film when I watch it. And I'm talking about the 2019 movie right now. I'm constantly torn between thinking, this is a really compelling drama about mental illness and a really compelling like thriller about this man who and his descent into madness. And I'm torn between that opinion and the opinion of, this is kind of a crappy Joker movie. Like, there's not a lot of Joker going on in this movie, and the movie never really gets to Joker. We see glimpses of it. We get a little scene of him dancing down a staircase that goes, oh, that looks like Joker. And we get like him dancing out onto the Murray Franklin show, and that sort of looks like Joker. And we get him standing up on the cop car and drawing a smile on his face with blood, and that sort of looks like Joker. But for 98% of the film, it's Arthur Fleck. And so I'm always torn and I'm frustrated because I'm going, on one hand, we've got a really interesting movie about this guy named Arthur Fleck. And on the other hand, me as a comic book fan is going, could your Joker movie have more Joker things in it?
Exactly.
And then frustrate, you know, we go, sorry, I don't want to cut you off.
Yep. No, you're fine. You're fine. I think I feel the exact same way. And I feel like this movie is an exact copy of those emotions for me. The film is very different. Mm-hmm. It's not just a rehash. It's not like Hangover 1 and Hangover 2. Hangover 2 is just a rehash of Hangover 1, which Todd Phillips also did. But this is a very different movie. But emotionally, I went through the same process, which is exactly what you just said, where I'm like, this is a great movie, but it's not the Joker. It's really just Arthur Fleck. And he does the same thing. He keeps kind of showing glimpses of being the Joker, but then he pulls back. And obviously, you know, in the end, he obviously pulls completely back. But it's very, very frustrating and very, very annoying because I've been thinking about it too. Like, if this movie wasn't called Joker, it would, I think it would be great. But because, but that's the problem. But because it's called the Joker, you have this history with this character that I am expecting. So that's why I want to see it. So if it wasn't called Joker, if it was just called Killer, or, you know, Murderer, whatever, it would be a very interesting movie. I don't think it would have made $1 billion. I don't think it would have had the appeal that it did. I mean, because could you make him dress up as a clown? No, that wouldn't make sense. And everybody say it would be a ripoff of the Joker. So it's like, it's weird. It's a really weird thing to grapple with.
But here's the, because I agree with you about Foley Adua, that it's much the same thing. It's like, we talked about this on our Joker episode, that it was like, maybe in Joker 2, we'll get an opportunity to see more of the version of Joker that Arthur Fleck becomes. We don't get that. Spoiler alert. That's not in Joker 2. If anything, he's just as much Arthur Fleck as he ever was. We even have the same arc where, like, he's taking his meds, and then he stops taking his meds at one point in the movie to become, and that we literally repeat things. But there is something that Phillips is clearly doing here to me, and in my mind, in the second film, that depending on how I want to look at it as an audience member and as a film fan, as a, you know, it might make me like the first movie even more. And it might make the whole story that he was telling work even more to me. And that's if I just go, hey, maybe I just need to set my comic book fan hat aside and my expectations of what I think I'm owed by a film called Joker that's set in Gotham City aside. And just watch the two movies that were presented to me on their own terms. And what I think we actually wind up having here is a meta commentary on the audience's relationship to the character of Joker. Because what I think Joker Foley Adu winds up being is Todd Phillips is, I think he was already trying to say this in the first film, but he's really driving it home that he's going, do you guys care about this guy, Arthur Fleck? Or do you just care about the idea of Joker? And that's what Joker Foley Adu winds up being about, that I think is actually kind of brilliant, is this sort of confrontation with the audience that's like, you managed to connect with this guy and his story that's very sad and all of these things that happened to him and the way that he was abused and his mental illness and his kind of pushback against the system. My question to you is, are you relating to this guy because you relate to his story? Or are you relating to him and cheering for him and putting posters of him up in your dorm rooms because he's the Joker from Batman? And would you care about him and his struggle and the things and the people that are mean to him and the abuse that he endures if he weren't the Joker? Would you care about him if he was just some guy? And that to me is interesting. That's an interesting conversation.
It is. And, you know, I mean, of the few videos that I've watched, Todd Phillips is definitely trying to drive his point home that, like, you shouldn't really like the Joker, kind of like what you're saying, right? Like, but I don't think, like, there's obviously people who take the Joker too seriously. There's people who took Joker, the first movie, too seriously, right? And they, like, they thought he was a hero and they thought, oh, he's totally right. But I think that's such a small amount of people relatively, right? Like, the reason that I love the Joker is because I know he's a bad guy. Like, I know he's bad, but it's very interesting. I find those characters who are bad very interesting when they really push people to their limits, like Joker does to Batman, right? Yeah. Like, and he's a very interesting character to watch. It's the same thing as Skyfall with Javier Bardem. I loved that character. He is very interesting to watch. He's a horrible person. Like, he's not a good guy, but he's so interesting to watch because he's pushing James Bond. And so the thing that I think Todd Phillips missed the mark on is, like, dude, you're really focusing so much on a small group of people that misunderstood your film. But I think the vast majority of people understood your film. They don't love the Joker as a person. They don't think he's an idol. He's just a very interesting character. And so when he did make this movie to be like, listen, you shouldn't really care this much about the Joker. He's not really a great guy. It's like, yeah, I know that. I understand that. Like,
yeah,
like, I, but uh, like, I understand that people will misunderstand movies all the time. It happens no matter what you do.
Yeah.
So did you really have to like go after the majority of people that didn't, that did understand your movie? Like, does that make sense?
No, totally. That has been one of the most robust criticisms of the film is that it feels like he is punishing people for enjoying the first film.
Yes.
He's attacking the fans of the first film. And people are going, why are you, you know, why'd you make this second movie just to tell us that we were all wrong to enjoy the first one?
Yeah.
I personally feel like that's a little bit of, I almost feel like, because I totally get what I think everything you're saying there is very valid. And I do think that that's a valid frustration and criticism to have.
Right.
And I also think that you're right that like he might be overestimating the actual amount of people who were idolizing this version of the Joker and just kind of misunderstanding that it's not that we idolize Joker, it's that we are fascinated by the character. And if you are presenting us with a Taxi Driver style character study, but set in Gotham City and about the origins of Joker, we would like to see you explore the character of not just Arthur Fleck, but of who you are telling us Arthur Fleck becomes, which is Joker. Right. Not because we idolize Joker, but because we are interested in Joker as a character. Now, I think that there's a little bit of an overreaction from people feeling like he was calling them out or attacking them or anything like that with the film, because I do think that what he always has been trying to do from the beginning, and I think this is in the first Joker film, is just make sort of a meta commentary, a deconstruction of the character. He's going, I know that you're fascinated with the character as it's been presented to you as this this supervillain that goes up against a superhero. We're going to deconstruct the character. You know, the same way that like a meal, a deconstructed hamburger, as if a chef presented to you like a raw patty with like a slice of cheese next to it and like some diced onions off in the corner, and it's like a deconstruction of what a hamburger is. That's what he's presenting here, is let's strip away all of the bells and whistles of the comic book genre and let's get into kind of a deconstructed version of the character. Let's break him down just to sort of the aesthetics of the face paint and the suit and create a character that feels more realistic or grounded, or someone that the audience can relate to on a human level. Because I think that the way that we normally relate to Joker is just through fascination. We just go, what a fascinating madman. His philosophy is so hard to get a real beat on. We don't really know why he does the things that he does. And this is a character where he goes, this is going to be something that feels much more close. You're going to feel like you've met this person before. You've encountered people like this, people who, are overlooked and have significant trauma. So I don't necessarily think he's saying you were wrong to enjoy my first film. I think he's continuing in a way this meta narrative, this deconstruction of the idea of the character. Whether or not that works for people, I completely get that for some people it's like, well, I don't like the way that you're choosing to go about deconstructing or representing this character that I'm, you know, but
yeah, I think you're totally right. I think you're totally accurate too. Very valid. So,
as we said, the plot of this film is not super, it's not super rich, but we can sort of get into moments. This movie starts off, with Arthur Fleck. Well, if you start, it starts off with a cartoon.
Yeah, it starts off with a 5-minute cartoon, 3-minute cartoon, whatever it is.
And it sort of harkens back to like, I don't know if you remember when we were growing up, we'd watch movies like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and they would start with like a cartoon or a Christmas Vacation or Who Framed Roger Rabbit that starts with that, you know, and it reminded me of that, like these old movies that would kind of have like a Pixar short, you know?
The cartoon actually pretty much states the theme of the movie.
Absolutely.
Because it's Joker and his shadow, right? So like Joker goes to the Murray Franklin show, his shadow kind of takes over him and he's kind of like a loser again, and his shadow steals all of his face paint and like puts him as the Joker, and like it's basically the battle between his two selves, the Joker and Arthur Fleck.
And again, this is the problem with with the frustrating aspect of both of these movies is that cartoon should be called Arthur and His Shadow.
Yeah, probably.
The cartoon is called Joe, like, or I think it's called Me and My Shadow. So oh, I guess okay, that's okay. Fair. But yeah, I think yeah. It is. I think it does say something like the Joker in Me and My Shadow. I think it says something like that.
I think it does. Yeah.
So it, you know, like the accurate thing that we're being shown here is that it's Arthur Fleck and His Shadow. And His Shadow is being presented to us as this Joker persona, which we will come to find out in this film is kind of a deception.
Yep.
But that is the theme of the film, is Arthur Fleck struggling with kind of the fame and the symbol that has become this Joker persona. After the cartoon, we find Arthur Fleck in Arkham, which I really like the depiction of Arkham in this movie.
It's a lot like Alcatraz.
Yeah, and it is a bleak, dark, filthy place. The first thing we see is a bunch of inmates being woken up, and they have to take a pot that they pee in every night to the latrines and empty their piss pot.
it's pretty gross. Like it is. It very much sets the mood of like, this sucks.
Yeah,
it's not a good place. Arkham's not a good place.
Yeah, and right away we sort of get a sense that, you know, one of the first things that's said by guards is like, "Hey Fleck, do you have a joke for us?" And we kind of get this sense that the guards have a fun time joking around with Arthur Fleck and kind of teasing him. And Arthur, for the first little while in this movie, doesn't say much. He hardly speaks. He hardly speaks a word for maybe the first 15 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
We learn that he is approaching his trial is coming up, and we also get to learn that he is in therapy and he meets
with his attorney, Catherine Keener.
Yeah.
And she really seems to be on his side. Mm-hmm. She really wants him. She seems to understand. I mean, she's trying to win her trial, but she also just seems to actually care about Arthur in a way.
Yeah.
So we meet her pretty early on, and she really thinks that they have a good case in if they try to make it seem like him and the Joker are two separate people.
Yeah.
Again, going into this theme, like, okay, I think we can get the insanity plea if you basically say that the Joker is not you. You are not the Joker. That's a pretty immediate, you know, again, going into the theme. So,
yeah. And again, yeah, we're going into this theme of like, of who is the Joker? Is Arthur Fleck the Joker, or is the Joker some kind of persona that takes over him? Or is he, you know, is he just trying to be the Joker? Because it's the first thing that's ever made him feel seen in the world. I don't think this movie really kind of picks up or gets going until he's being walked through a wing to go have a meeting with his attorney. And on the way, he passes this music room. There's a bunch of people who, I guess it's like B wing, and B wing is more for people who are there for psychological reasons. Yeah. Arthur's being kept in like the security wing where criminals are kept, violent criminals are kept. And then there's like a wing that, you know, psych patients are kept in. I don't know why Arkham Asylum is set up this way where it has, you know, maximum security, violent criminals. For the plot, exactly. And he sees this woman who catches his eye, and she walks out into the hall. And this is a thing you and I have talked about before that I have a problem with in sequels. She comes out and she does the Zazzy Beats, miming being shot in the head thing to him. And it's Lady Gaga. And my problem with this is like, she does it as though she knows that this is some kind of significant symbol to Arthur Fleck. And it's me just, I just go like, why would she know that movie? Like it's a thing that sequels do sometimes where they're just doing a nod to the previous film. And I go like, hey, the reason why Zazzy Beetz did that in the elevator to Arthur Fleck in Joker 2019 is because her kid was acting up and she was having a stressful day. And her neighbor, Arthur looks at her and she looks at him like, oh geez, can you, some of these days, man. Yeah. And Arthur takes that as a sign of friendship and he does it back to her. There's no reason why Lady Gaga's character would be doing it in this movie other than to either A, just kind of wink at the audience like, hey, remember the other movie, or B, wink at Arthur like, hey, remember that symbol that you had with you and your neighbor? And she wouldn't be aware of either of those things in the, you know, but
yep. And I noticed that too, actually. I was like, that's what's the point? Why would she do that?
Yeah. But. Yeah. But anyway, Arthur winds up getting, because he's not, Arthur is very well behaved and, you know, he doesn't get into a lot of trouble, and the guards wind up getting him approved for going to music lessons. And this is also because one of the guards who kind of has this weird sort of chummy relationship with Arthur, played by Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah.
He likes to sing. And so he wants, for his own selfish reasons, he wants to take Arthur to singing class so that he can also sing.
I love Brendan Gleeson. I think he's an amazing actor. I don't, and I know that there's a lot more. He's a strange character in this movie. Because I wasn't really getting exactly what his motivations were. Cause he did seem to really like Arthur, and like, and I don't know, maybe it's, I'm sure if I looked into it more, I could figure it out, but he just seems to like the star appeal. It's almost like he likes Arthur because he's somebody famous that he can kind of be around. One thing they did talk about, they made a TV movie of the whole situation.
Right.
So he's kind of famous.
Yeah.
But and,
well,
I think,
and also he committed his crime, his most famous crime on national television.
Yes.
And you know.
Yeah. So I love Brendan Gleeson, and he did a good job in this, but he's kind of a strange character in this movie for me.
Well, you mentioned Catherine Keener too, and it's like, that's a thing that this movie has going on, is a lot of like big actors who are really good, who don't have a lot to do.
Yeah.
So Catherine Keener and Brendan Gleeson are in this movie, and they just don't really have much to do. They're doing good work, but their characters are pretty underwritten. And then the biggest example of this is the co-star of the film, Lady Gaga, who just has so little as far as events for her character. The vast majority of her screen time is spent in fantasy with Arthur, which is a major theme of the film, but there just aren't like events for her character to go through. She's just sort of there. And that's the only person who's really doing any real work here as far as like moving through events in a plot is Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
yeah, and he meets her, he goes back, they immediately, I mean, the thing about Harley Quinn, the thing about Lady Gaga is she's obsessed with Joker.
Yeah.
Joker, not Arthur Fleck.
Yes.
Like, she's a fangirl, basically.
Yeah.
I did actually think this was an interesting way to interpret Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Because actually, she wasn't in the comics first. She was in the animated TV show. That's where her character was created.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a therapist who the Joker kind of turned and made her kind of go crazy. And in this one, she's a patient and she gets to know him. I actually thought, I was like, that makes more sense. She went to school for psychology, right? Her dad is a doctor. So it was an interesting way to interpret the character. I actually really liked it. I thought it worked really well for the movie, but I totally agree. She didn't, all she is she represents what Arthur doesn't like, which she comes from an upper class family. She lies about that. She says that she like tried to burn down her parents' house and her dad is dead, but her dad is actually a doctor. She comes from the upper class. She's kind of faking it to get into Joker's good graces. So she represents more of that problem rather than being, you know, a more interesting character like you were talking about.
I think that, so a lot of people, you know, in the fandom feel like making her just another patient at the hospital sort of robs her of the tragicness of her original story of like being like a person who, you know, is a well-respected psychiatrist, you know, with degrees in psychiatry and psychology, and she gets pulled down from her pedestal by the Joker. Mm-hmm. He emotionally manipulates her into losing her sanity, and he pulls her down into his madness with him, and that's sort of a tragic fall for that character, and they feel like this new interpretation sort of robs her of that. But I agree with you. I think that, you know, if we are just, again, the big push and pull here for people watching this film is the movie you want Phillips to be making versus the movie he's making. And I think that this goes back to 2019 Joker 2. That's why I don't have as big of a problem with this as a lot of people do, because I've always felt like I needed to adjust my expectation and just take what Phillips was giving me at face value. And he's giving me a deconstruction. He's giving me an Elseworlds deliberately different interpretation. And this interpretation is something that to me makes more sense.
Me too.
I can, or at least in a feeling of what seems more plausible. And yeah. I think that kind of commenting on this thing that happens with people like, you know, Ted Bundy or Charles Manson or even Jeffrey Dahmer, where in prison they would sort of develop these fan clubs. Like women would just write them letters and be like, "I'm in love with you. I want to run away. I, what can we do? I want to marry you." And it's disturbing and kind of strange behavior and probably indicative of some kind of mental illness, but it is something that happens in the real world. And so I buy this idea that a fangirl of this high profile criminal sort of works her way into a situation where she can meet him. Yeah. And I do like how it bolsters the themes of like, she's providing Arthur with, because immediately what happens is they meet each other in music class. The sparks fly immediately. She pretty much lets him know right off the bat, "I'm here because I wanted to meet you. I came here because I was looking for you." And this is, I mean, outside of the fame and the notoriety that he got for shooting Murray Franklin on the show, I think this is still the first time that Arthur in real life has ever had someone actually present him with the possibility of romance.
He
had a completely fake relationship with Zazie Beetz in the first film.
Yeah.
But this is real. And this is where the musical element of the movie first starts to take off. Arthur goes back to his wing of the penitentiary, the asylum, and he's watching on TV as they're announcing that the DA, Harvey Dent, is going to be seeking the death penalty. And instead of being sad, he starts to sing "For Once in My Life." And it's because this character, Lee, has put a song in his heart and made him feel like the world's not so bleak and not so dark.
Yeah. And I mean, this is the driving factor of him wanting to continue the Joker, because in the beginning of the movie, at least I interpreted it as like, he's done with the Joker already. He's kind of like, that's not me, I'm done. But then because she loves the Joker so much, he is trying to bring that character out so that he can have this relationship with her. And again, going into that song, which that musical number where he goes in, you know, between the inmates and stuff, that one was fine. That made sense. Like that
worked for me. And so I'm sitting here in the audience going, "Wait a minute, that was a lovely musical number."
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and the
inmates kind of get involved in it. It's good.
Yeah. And this is a jukebox musical. That's a kind of musical that it does not have its own original songs. It's pulling songs from the American Songbook. But this was a song that felt thematically correct. It felt like it was correct for this point in the plot. It was actually telling, it was in some way informing me about like where the plot is going and letting me know, okay, now that Lee has sort of resurrected this idea of the Joker being important to Arthur and that, you know, he's not just a loser or a nobody. Mm-hmm. He's willing to have hope again and to start dancing again. So right off the bat, like, immediately when the musical numbers start, I'm sitting in the audience going, God, the way that people were talking about this movie led me to believe that the musical numbers were just awful. And this was a pretty well executed one.
I thought that the first two are actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Next one is they're watching a movie together, right?
Yes. Yeah. They're watching a movie. She sets off fire. She goes back to have a cigarette. She throws her matches into the piano and it starts a fire and they're able to get out of the jail and they have a dance and they dance, you know, and they're singing to each other. I can't remember what the song was.
Maybe that's entertainment or
I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't I can't remember if it's a continuation of the song that was playing in the movie that they were watching or if it's its own song.
Yeah.
I can't remember. But this musical number in particular is what I think Joker Folie could have used more of, which is Joker and Harley do a thing together. Well, she does a thing. She lights something on fire, and this is real. This happens in the real world of the film. And then the two of them sing a song and dance while mayhem ensues and while they escape from prison. I would have liked, so most of the musical numbers exist in the fantasy, in the shared fantasy of Joaquin Phoenix's character, who is either Arthur Fleck or Joker, depending on how you're looking at it, or and Lee. And that's, this is the thing too, is I saw a lot of criticism of this film early on of people saying the musical element in this film makes no sense. But it actually, I mean, immediately it makes perfect sense to me, because if you look up what folie à deux means, it's a term that refers to a kind of shared psychosis. When two people are stuck in the same delusional psychosis, two people specifically, because it's a folie à deux. If it's a folie à trois, it's three people, and so on and so forth.
Yes. Very French.
Very French. But that it's in the title. Yeah. So when people go, why are they singing? And also some people said, I get why Arthur's singing. We're in his fantasy. But how come Lady Gaga's singing? And it's like, because it is a folie à deux. It is a fantasy shared by two people. And I'm with that. It's just
too.
As far as musical theater goes, this is where this movie starts to, because up to this point, as an audience member, I'm going, hey, we got gorgeous cinematography. We got really interesting production design. We've got two pretty well-handled musical numbers. I'm going, what's the problem with the film? What is everybody talking about? And this to me is where the movie starts to kind of, the actual plot of the movie starts to kind of die on the vine. Yeah. Because this is an opportunity, this sequence, get them out of that prison.
Yeah.
Like they should escape and get Joaquin Phoenix and Lady Gaga out in Gotham City doing stuff. Have them go on a crime spree, a murder spree together. I want to see scenes where Joker and Harley are robbing banks, where they're and they're doing musical numbers while they're doing these things, while they're advancing the plot.
Have the musical numbers be flamboyant, be crazy, you know, over the top. Everybody's dancing and have it be a lot like the courtroom musical number. That's the musical number that I thought was great.
It's fantastic. But again, it's not actually happening. It's fantastic.
Again, yeah. But if they're actually in Gotham City and like they're having these musicals, you could like have them be singing. And then you can cut to what's actually going on.
Yeah.
And you can cut back. Like you can still have a serious, you can have a juxtaposition of like this happy, fun, exciting thing where this, you know, really intense thing is going on, and it could work really well. But I agree with you, after this musical number where they're dancing in, you know, basically out or just before the gates of the prison, they get caught. And then after that is kind of where it all, not where it all falls apart, but where it doesn't get as good, because then he has an interview with a television personality, Patty Myers, who's played by Steve Coogan, who I thought also was completely wasted. I love Steve Coogan.
Again, Steve Coogan. Like there's sort of a theme of really great actors being brought into this film and not being used.
Yes. Yeah. And he's like, I saw Steve Coogan in the trailers, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. I totally see that. I wish he would have had more to do. I wish I don't mean this. It would have been very interesting if the Joker tried to kill him, you know, or had something that would have been very interesting. But this is where it gets really frustrating, because he's talking and they're kind of like arguing back and forth, and then he starts singing, and he has a musical number, but all he does is sit there. And the camera just kind of focuses on him, and that's it. And I'm like, why aren't you like dancing? And like, why aren't the guards doing something? And why aren't you like moving around and like having all this? You're just sitting there. And there's a lot of musical numbers that are them just kind of sitting there. And that was really frustrating for me.
Well, and every single musical number in the entire film starts the exact same way. It starts with someone very quietly, very slowly, very kind of like almost speak singing a song. Like they'll be talking, and then one person will go like, "All you need in the world is love." Yeah. And then a musical number, but it's that way every single time. And that's sort of Todd Phillips just not I think, having a good enough sense for musical structure. He has every single song start the exact same way, rather than like, hey, maybe you're talking to Steve Coogan, you know, take a page out of a good comp as far as musicals that are set in prisons would be Chicago, which was choreographed and directed by Rob Marshall. Fantastic movie. Take a page out of the way that that movie does things, where it'll be like an interview scene with a reporter, and then there'll be like a flashbulb that goes off, and all of a sudden we're in a different place, and the musical number starts with a band.
Yes.
So
yes.
Maybe he's talking to Steve Coogan, and they're arguing, and as the argument is building up and reaching its boiling point, boom, like ba-da-ba-ba-da-bop, and there's a musical number, and you know, the walls break away of the prison, and the camera crew that's there with they're all dancing, and it's a big thing, and it's a surprise. But every single song starts the exact same way. It starts with Arthur kind of like muttering a melody to himself, and then it grows into a song. Or it starts with Lee kind of half singing, muttering. And it's that thing over and over and over again. And again, if we're not actually progressing the plot or enriching the inner lives of the characters, we're just sort of like taking a break to sing a song.
Yeah. And that's what that's what this musical number was. It just like taking a break to sing a song, and then he's done. And then it's like, okay, all right, like whatever.
Yeah. It's revealed to Arthur after this interview, or I can't remember if it's before or after, but it's revealed to him by his attorney that, Lee, his new girlfriend that he, you know, is in love with, that she isn't who she said she was, that she lied to him. She, you know, has rich parents, and
she says she's playing you like a fool. Right.
Yeah.
So he,
And it turns out that you know, Lee has wealthy parents, is from a different part of town than Arthur is, and that she had herself committed so that she could be in a position to meet Arthur. And it, you know, again, people had varying feelings about this revelation, because it's like, but I personally think that, again, this plays for me, because she's a person who's already wrapped up, and she wants to be in the fantasy. That fantasy world that we saw Arthur Fleck living in by himself in the first movie, this woman, Lee, whoever she is, whether you like this version of the character, Harley Quinzel, or not, she is a person who wants to live in that fantasy world with Arthur. I just feel like
with the Joker.
That's correct. I just feel like this movie needs to have the two of them living out that fantasy, but doing things together. Because pretty much for the rest of the movie, every time Lee and Arthur interact, they sing together, but it's all just, these aren't events that are happening. And again, that's why I go back to, like, when she lights that piano on fire and they escape, I go, hey, movie, the screenplay is having them get away together. Let them get away instead of pulling them immediately right back and throwing Arthur into solitary confinement.
Yeah.
Let them get out and let the Joker and Harley do some stuff. Yeah. You know,
I completely agree. I think it would have been awesome if they would have escaped. And I heard somebody say they thought it would be interesting if the movie was more about Harvey Dent trying to prosecute, which I think would be interesting. But I think what would be really good is if they escaped, and then you make the movie about Commissioner Gordon, who's probably not commissioner at the time, but who's chasing him. And then you can have this, you can still have the Joker be the main character, but Commissioner Gordon could be the one that we are emotionally attaching to, because he's the one who's actually seeing the horrors that are being committed, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it would have been really interesting to have another character who is the good person to be that. So you could have Arthur Fleck completely embrace the Joker with Harley Quinn, and they kept going and doing all these things. And then if you have, you know, Officer Gordon or whatever he is kind of chasing after him, Detective Gordon, that could have been an interesting movie too. And you still could have had the musical, and you could have had a character that we could attach to morally, you know, with Commissioner Gordon, right? And his morals could be tested. I think that would have been, I would have loved to see that musical.
Well, and again, this is just us wanting more of a movie that caters to the Batman fans.
Very true. Like very true.
We want to see the characters that we know do things in this universe. And again, it's like, you know, we've got this theme in this movie of great actors being wasted, Brendan Gleeson and Catherine Keener and Steve Coogan. But we've also got characters like Harvey Dent, who's just there. And again, all of these criticisms, I think, are completely valid. They're just also criticisms that I already had for the 2019 movie. That's why I think I'm so confused by the response to this film, because everything that people are saying, I'm going, yeah, totally, I hear you. Also, the 2019 movie has all of those problems as well. So I don't know why everyone gave the 2019 movie a pass, but this one, they're like, that's the worst movie I've ever seen. It's like, well, they're very similar films. Like they have a lot of the same problems. So
they're different in what happens, but they're emotionally very similar films. He goes through the same patterns pretty much. Like he gives into the Joker and then he takes back, and then he gives in and he pulls back, and like, you know, they end a little bit differently, but it's pretty much the same.
Takes his medicine, then stops taking his medicine, and you know, like finds a reason to just fully give into it at one point, but then pull. You know, it's like they
The biggest difference is there's only one death in this movie, and spoiler, it's Arthur Fleck. He gets killed, so he doesn't kill anybody in this movie. Whereas in the other one, he gives into it. I'm sure people died in the explosion, but that's not, you know.
Yeah, and anyway. the reason why this screenplay can't have Harley and Joker escaping from prison and going on a crime spree together, going on a murder spree together or whatever, is because Todd Phillips wants to do this courtroom drama, which in a vacuum is not an uninteresting idea, to be like, have the Joker standing trial for crimes that he committed and representing himself as the Joker in a musical where he's sort of making a show of the criminal justice process. That I totally am like, I get what the movie wants to, what Todd Phillips wants to do, what the movie wants to do. And I go, that's all really interesting. That's basically what happens. This movie becomes a courtroom drama halfway through. We start the trial of Arthur Fleck, and pretty quickly he sees that there is massive support for him in the form of people supporting Joker. Just like he has the opportunity to be loved if only he will embrace the Joker persona by Lee, he also has the opportunity to be a leader and a symbol of a movement if only he will embrace the Joker persona. This movie basically lives the back half of this plot lives in the courtroom, kind of rehashing the events of the first film.
Yeah. And I think it's at the midpoint is they start the trial, and I am with you where I was with the movie, like, oh, this is going to be interesting doing a courtroom movie now, you know, courtroom drama. Like I could see how this could be really interesting for the Joker to manipulate the system. But it really wasn't. Like you said, all they do is just kind of restate what happened in the first movie. And Zazie Beetz is up giving her testimony, which was interesting to hear her point of view, but it's not anything that I didn't expect. Like, that's exactly how I would expect you would have reacted.
It's just a character from the first movie being like, hey, that stuff that happened in the first movie made me feel weird. It's like, oh, I know.
Yeah. And so it's like during her testimony, this is when Arthur Fleck gets up and he fires his attorney and he says, I'm going to represent myself, you know, and that she's like, you're making a huge mistake. Like, this is not a good idea. Don't do this. And everybody cheers for him. And they were so excited. And that's when he really, you know, he kind of is going to give in to the Joker. And then he starts representing himself. And I mean, during this, there's some more, you know, musical numbers, and they're kind of the same where they're just like you said, they start off kind of slow and then they don't really do much. Mm-hmm. There is the one musical number in the courtroom, which I mentioned before was awesome, where he is singing and he is frustrated and he is going through a fantasy. He kills the judge. He doesn't in real life. He just in his fantasy, he kills the judge. Does he kill anybody else? I don't know if he kills anybody else.
He shoots a cameraman.
That's right.
And this is a moment where this is similar. If Joker 2019 and Joker Folia are very similar on their beats, their emotional beats, this is like the moment to me that is the same as the staircase moment in the first movie. So the first movie has him dancing down the staircase, and that's like the most Joker that we get. That's the closest to a traditional Joker interpretation that we get in the entire movie. And this moment in the, so we should say when he decides to represent himself, he represents himself as Joker. He wears full face paint. And he wears a suit that looks like a Joker suit. But this musical number that he does in the court where he smashes the judge's head with a giant hammer.
He does kill Harvey Dent as well.
Yeah. And it's the closest he comes in the entire film to looking like the Joker.
Yes.
And it's similar to the 2019 film. It's like we just get a little glimpse of it.
Yeah.
And it's not even real this time. It's literally just a thing that he imagines. And
none of it happened.
And so again, I totally understand comic book fans and people who are going to see two movies that are called Joker and Joker Folie à Deux, about a guy in Gotham City who wears face paint that looks like the Joker, and going, could you please do something as the Joker in either one of these movies? And not just for like a single scene or a single moment, but can there be, you know, like, The Dark Knight, it's just the Joker. It's just, you know, and I get that, like, this is a character study about it's a deconstruction, but like, I've always felt like the first movie and this movie should have more balance between, even with that cartoon at the beginning, setting up the theme, me and my shadow. Can we have more push and pull between Arthur and his shadow? It's really just Arthur trying his level best to pretend to be Joker.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And he, the sequence is great. I wish that would have been more of the movie. Yeah. But it none of it happened. He doesn't really kill a judge. He doesn't really kill Harvey Dent or, you know, shoot the cameraman or anything. It's just in his head. Yeah. But a very interesting sequence, which I would have loved to see more of. Mm-hmm. And then he starts, this was the other sequence that I thought was absolutely brilliant and just done amazing. They bring in Gary Puddles.
Yeah.
Who is the little person from the first movie that when Arthur killed, you know, the other clown, Gary's in the room. And this whole scene, this is when I was like, this is absolutely brilliant. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Like it's very sad. And the actor, I don't know his name. I'll have to look it up, but the actor who plays Gary does an amazing job. You know, he goes up and he just talks about how horrible it was for him, how he's scared all the time. And it's really interesting too, because Joker
Lee Gill.
Yes, that's Lee right. Gill. He did a great job.
Yeah.
You really feel for the character. You really feel for him. You feel sad. And because the Joker actually likes Gary, and he's like, I said, I wasn't going to hurt you, Gary. Like, I like you. And then
Arthur
likes Gary.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, Arthur, you're the only one who wasn't mean to me. And like, conversely, Gary wasn't mean to him, you know? So like, it was a really, really interesting part of the movie. And this is really go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, finish your thought.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, that musical number that we talked about liking so much, where he smashes the judge's head with a gavel, that song is called The Joker. And he finishes that song by saying, the Joker is me. That's the bit. And it's like, this is the closest we also get to a proper musical number in a musical where at this point, our protagonist is saying, I am the Joker. That's who I am. There is no Arthur. I'm the Joker. And this scene, while it's great, while this Gary Puddles scene is great, it is also the thing that kind of pisses off a lot of fans, because almost immediately what we see is the veneer of the Joker persona crack, and we see who's underneath, and it's Arthur, and it's always been Arthur, and Arthur's just doing his best to try to seem like the Joker, or what he thinks people want from the Joker, what he thinks Lee wants from the Joker. And what we see is that while Arthur is a guy who was pushed to a breaking point and, you know, committed some awful crimes, at the end of the day, like, he didn't want to hurt his friend Gary. And when he sees the harm that he's caused to his friend Gary, we see Arthur's humanity underneath that, and he can't handle it. And it leads to what I think is the most, the controversy of this film for the fans of the film. It leads to the scene where Arthur basically gives his closing argument, and he tells the jury, I'm not the Joker. I never was. There never was any Joker. I'm Arthur Fleck. Yeah. That's all there's ever been. There's only been Arthur. I did those things. I committed those crimes. And the Gary scene is the catalyst to make that happen.
Yes.
And well, this
then
is
he, sorry, he goes he go well he closes he doesn't have anybody else, and then he goes back to the prison where he gets assaulted by the guards, and yeah. his friend gets murdered. The guards in their rage murder his friend. And he kind of so the Gary scene is really the catalyst that makes him go. And then the fact that he gets assaulted and his friend gets murdered, it kind of all comes together. And then it leads into him denying that he is the Joker. And so, it's always been Arthur Fleck.
I'm going to need to watch this movie again, but people seem to be pretty certain that what happens to him with the guards is that he is sexually assaulted.
Yes.
I see how people are getting that. I see how it could be hinted, but I don't see anything that's overt enough to. Did I miss something? Is there something? Is somebody taking their belt off? Or I feel like I missed something that spells that out.
I think clearly. So. There's a couple things because I thought that. So he first, you know, they start taking his pants off, and he's like, "Oh, buy me a drink first." Mm. And then the fact that they are in a prison, and they go into the showers. It's to me, I think they very intentionally left it up to the viewer. Like whatever you think happened, it could have happened. I don't think they are saying that he was sexually assaulted, but I don't think they're not saying he was sexually assaulted. So it's kind of like, if that's what you think, then that's, you know, he could have gotten beaten. I don't think it's as big of a deal. I mean, I could see how it's one way or the other. So, but I thought of that. I mean, if you're in prison, you go into the showers, and somebody doesn't like you, it's implied in many other movies and also just kind of in our culture that you're going to get sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
That's what I took from it. But I don't think the movie is explicitly stating it. I think they're leaving it up to us.
They definitely want there to be something. I think that this is like another thing that pushes Arthur to reject the Joker persona.
Yes.
He sees how he hurt Gary. He sees his friend get killed because he's clowning around as the Joker. And then he gets assaulted. And I think he goes, you know what? Joker's not helping me, actually. I don't, you know. So he confesses in his closing statements that he's not the Joker. He never was the Joker. And as this is all happening and, you know, Lee leaves the courtroom, she walks out on him. A bomb goes off, a car bomb goes off. And, you know, there's this interesting image of Harvey Dent with half of his face kind of scarred up and stuff. And it's like, that's fascinating. That's sure. That's interesting. Arthur sort of wanders out into the street, and he's picked up by a guy that looks almost exactly like him. He's like a
cosplayer almost.
Yeah. He's dressed exactly like the version of the Joker that shot Murray Franklin on the Murray Franklin show. He's wearing almost the exact same suit, has the makeup, has the green hair and everything. And he pulls Arthur into a car, and we realize that sort of the adherence to the Joker movement have blown up the courthouse in order to try to free Arthur, which, you know, okay, sure, like wild plan there, guys. Yeah. But
and then the symbolism of this, you know, he gets taken by this other Joker, and he's like, okay, he gets in the car, but then he realizes, I don't want to be in here, and he runs, and he is literally running away from himself.
Right.
Because the Joker looks exactly like he used to. So he's running away from that persona.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting, you know, very symbolic.
Again, like this is the thing is like, I feel like as we've been breaking down this plot, we're mostly talking about stuff that's frustrating, but I cannot emphasize how many strong, like the reason why I can't bring myself to just say like, this movie sucks is because even as we're talking about like him singing during the interview with Steve Coogan, that's a musical number that like, there's like this, it goes to black and you see this like cigarette get lit in the dark. And then this like spotlight open up on, there is some imagery that is so stunning. And talk about setting up the theme of me and my shadow with that cartoon, not only do you have this wonderful image of Arthur Fleck running down the street, being chased by the Joker from the first movie, which is like, Just a fantastic cinematic image. Like that's I'm sorry, that's good film craft right there.
It is.
And then also you've got this thing that is kind of, we haven't been talking about it, but the entire movie, and it's pretty hard to miss, there is an inmate in Arkham who in several different scenes as Arthur is moving through stuff, there's this guy that's looking at Arthur and smiling at him. And he's standing over Arthur's shoulder in a lot of scenes. There's a lot of scenes where Arthur will be looking at a TV and over his shoulder, there'll be this guy that's just smiling at him. And this man is, the whole movie's kind of hinting something's going to happen with this guy who's standing over Arthur's shoulder in a lot of scenes.
That's so funny. I didn't notice that he was in the background.
He's in the background that. Of a lot yep. of the movie. He's,
it's like now that I think about it, I'm sure that, yeah, that makes sense.
And he's standing like he's right positioned as a shadow. So there's all this stuff. There's me and my shadow, the actual shadow of Arthur's psychological persona of the Joker. There's the shadow of the kind of movement that he's built, these people chasing him down the street. And then there's this guy that he's in prison with that is following him around, that is sort of this shadowy presence that follows him around the entire movie. And this is like, this is strong, you know, visual storytelling.
Yes. It's very well, it's a very clear theme. And it's done really, really well with supporting visual symbols.
Yeah.
And you can't, I agree with you. Like, I can't deny how well that is set up and how good that is accomplished mm-hmm. with that whole theme. I think it again comes down to the fact like, well, if this is a Joker movie, then I'm expecting something else. And so that's where it gets frustrating. And I'll get into why it's also, it's also frustrating because in the end of the first movie, I can kind of see like, okay, well, he kind of gives into the Joker. That's how he becomes the Joker. But in this one, it's completely taken away. So then I feel like it's cheap that you just use Joker to get people to see the movie.
Right.
And I need to just, I guess if I separate myself from that, I still think this is an interesting movie. Not the best because of the musical aspect of it, because it could have been more...
say because of the execution of the musical aspect.
Exactly. It could have been more theatrical.
And again, it's frustrating because individual musical sequences will be visually engrossing. Like you're like them dancing on the roof with the Arkham Asylum sign. And you're like, this is visually, it's beautiful. Yeah. The sequence where Lady Gaga is singing like the jazz song and Joaquin Phoenix is tap dancing. I was like, hey, I'm like, as if this just in a vacuum, this sequence is beautifully shot, beautifully executed and really entertaining. The problem with it is, in context of this movie, it's not doing anything. I want Joker and Harley to be doing stuff. We didn't even talk about the fantasy sequence of him having her own show and her, you know, pulling a gun on him on the show,
shooting him,
and all this stuff. And that's at least that sequence is inviting us into their inner world in a way that says something about the movie, because what that sequence is setting up is that her allegiance is to the Joker persona, not to Arthur, and that she will turn on him if he does not deliver on the fantasy that she wants. And that's what happens here. He runs away. Yeah. He runs away from the movement, and he goes to find his girlfriend, and he finds her on the stairs from the first movie. I've heard some people go like, how did he know she would be there? But it's like, he was told that she got a unit at,
at his apartment,
at his apartment from the first film. So I buy that.
I got it.
Yeah.
This is another thing that kind of was frustrating. There's a lot of stuff from the trailer that was not in the movie.
Yeah.
I work in trailers. I understand it. Sometimes you get early cuts of the movie and you put stuff in because that's what they gave you and that's what you think is going to be in the movie. And then through the process of doing different versions, they'll cut things out. So, but there were so many things that were featured very, very prominently.
Yeah.
Them dancing down the courtroom stairs, doing the same dance that was not in it. Her getting in the elevator with her shorter haircut and smiling. Mm-hmm. That was also not in it. She just shows up. He goes to the stairs and she's cut her hair for no apparent reason. Mm-hmm. And she looks more like Harley Quinn, but then they basically just break up because she's like, we had a fantasy together and you gave up on it. Yep. She says something to that effect and she's like, so I'm done. So she goes back up the stairs and then he gets arrested. And so the thing that bothers me is that like, okay, there's no reason for her to have cut her hair.
Yeah.
There's no reason for her to look like that, but I know that there's more footage out there because I've seen it in the trailer. So it makes me think, well, what was the significance of it? How was it? That's mm-hmm. why it gets frustrating. But that's stuff I can overlook if it was great. But
if I had to guess, I would say based on that shot from the trailer of her getting into the elevator and the elevator closing and her having short hair and having the makeup on, I would say they were doing a mirror of what Arthur does in the first movie.
Where he
dyes his hair and he puts the makeup on and he gets in the elevator. Totally. I would say that's probably connected to her depression at him giving up on the fantasy or something like that.
Yeah. But she smiles, which makes me think, but yeah, I agree.
I don't, but again, there's a huge story beat here that is never answered or really explained. One that we kind of missed in the plot. Arthur's thrown into solitary confinement after they do the fire, way back earlier in the movie. Harley checks herself out of Arkham and comes and visits Arthur in solitary confinement. It's never really explained how she gets into his cell. I'm thinking this is clearly a fantasy sequence.
That's what I thought.
Of course, because she can't really be there. But
they wouldn't let her in.
But the way that the movie deals with that is like, no, that happened, because they have sex in that scene. And it's a really, really awkward and I think intentionally awkward and like weird love scene. But then Harley tells him, I'm pregnant. Yes. And this, and again, this is a problem I think that the movie has, but it's a problem that the 2019 movie has as well, because it introduces this question of, do Lee and Arthur have a baby on the way? And it never answers the question. He asks her about it when they're breaking up. What about our baby? And she just sort of walks away. And the 2019 movie has the same problem with the introduced question of, is Arthur Fleck Thomas Wayne's son? And the movie never definitively says no. It has Thomas Wayne say your mom was crazy and you were adopted and all this stuff. But like, also it's hinted that maybe that the movie never really wraps that up.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is like the Wayne family isn't even in Bruce. Like there's no mention of it in Joker Folie à Deux. But this whole thing of our Arthur and Harley having a kid is just
I think that the is Arthur Thomas Wayne's son. I like how that was handled a lot better in the first movie, because it says that he's not, but it's hinted that, well, maybe they forged those documents. They don't really know. So it's kind of like you can make up your mind. On this one, the baby, I immediately, when she says, I'm pregnant, I said, she's lying. She just wants to get with him. She just wants to use, I mean, she's not above lying, and so she's doing whatever she can to get the Joker to be with her. So
Kramer, you just don't believe women when they say
this woman is very much like, immediately I was like, no, she's not pregnant, she is a liar, and that's how I took it, like, and right, she's just using it.
I did too, but then the movie doesn't And it's like, fine, I don't need the movie to answer every single question for me, but it's like, why even introduce it if you're not going to do anything with it?
Yeah. And I kind of almost wish she would have said, I'm not pregnant. Like,
right.
I kind of wish that would have, it's not like, is he Thomas Wayne's son, where it's like, oh man, I don't know. Yeah. That's just like, you just put it in there and then there's not as much of a mystery to it. And
but it's still just like the 2019 movie with the, is he Thomas Wayne's son thing? I go like, but why? What's even the point?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that question actually winds up serving that movie at all. It's just sort of there. And that's another, this is sort of similar to that in my mind, where it's like, this is just another thing where it's like, oh, in this version of Joker and Harley, they're going to have a kid together. And it's like, or are they? I don't know. And it doesn't matter anyway, because there's not going to be another movie, because what happens is Joker and Harley break up. Arthur gets taken back to Arkham. He has now admitted to everyone that he is not the Joker, that he is just Arthur Fleck. And this movie ends. The guards come and tell Arthur, hey, Arthur Fleck, you have a visitor, which, again, I have a question. Who is the visitor? Because he and Lee broke up. So who's coming to visit Arthur? His mom's dead.
Was it the guards just trying to get him into the hallway?
Were the guards in on it with this other guy? But Arthur goes to see this visitor, And the man who has been his shadow for the entire time that he's been in Arkham walks up behind him and says, "Hey, Arthur, can I tell you a joke?" And he tells him this joke that isn't
A psychopath goes up to a clown.
Yeah.
So immediately the clown is Arthur and the psychopath is this guy. And he says, "You can get whatever you want." And then he says, "Well, you're going to get what you deserve," which is exactly what the Joker said to Murray Franklin right before he killed him. And then he starts stabbing him.
We can presume this is a Joker fanboy who, much like Lee, was disappointed with Arthur's rejection of the Joker persona. So he shanks Arthur to death. And as Arthur is bleeding out, and this is a very similar shot to the first movie, the 2019 movie, where he gets, beaten up by the teenagers at the beginning of the film, and he's lying on his side and his lapel flower sort of squirts out water. He's lying there and he's bleeding out, and there's, blood coming out of his mouth. And in the background, blurry, we can see that this man who has stabbed him, big twist, is carving a smile into his face. And the movie is telling us, this is the Joker. This is who will become...
I didn't see that he was carving a smile into his face because I was so focused on Arthur. So I almost want to watch it again. When it comes out, I want to watch it again. But I immediately did think, well, this is the Joker then, because he's laughing and he's killing him. So I got the point. But this just proves what we talked about last week in the Joker Mania episode. Arthur Fleck is not the Joker.
Right.
And that to me is like, oh man, it's like, and in one way, this just goes along with the entire movie. In one way, it's very interesting. Okay, he inspired the Joker. This is not the Joker. He just inspired someone to be the Joker. But then in the other way, it's like, well, then what's the point? Like, in the end of the first movie, I could be like, I don't think that's a Joker, but I could see if he gave into it, maybe he could actually become that character. He is not the Joker. Like, period. He's dead. He is not the Joker 100%.
And that's why I say I'm of two minds, because it's very similar in the 2019 film. It's like, hey, if this is just a drama about a guy named Arthur Fleck and his descent into madness, I think it's a really interesting and potentially genius film. But as a Joker film, I'm pretty it leaves a lot to be desired. And then in this next movie, I go, if this is a sequel to the 2019 Joker movie, which kind of opened up the possibility that, like, he's becoming the Joker. And now we have a sequel where I go, okay, cool. Sequel rules are, if I just saw the guy becoming the Joker at the end of the first movie, he should be the Joker in this movie, and you should pay that off. So as if this is a sequel to a Joker movie in the Gotham Batman universe, I am disappointed, and I want more Joker, and I want more events featuring the Joker. If this is a sequel to the Arthur Fleck story, once again, the movie kind of becomes potentially kind of brilliant, where it's like, if that's all that we've ever been doing, because that question, just like we talked about on the last episode, if this movie doesn't exist, I'm frustrated with the 2019 movie because I go, I don't think that this character ever gets where I want him to get. I don't think he ever fully becomes the Joker. Then this movie comes in and goes, that's because he never was. And at least there's an answer to that question of, like, the reason why in the first movie he never feels like he fully, because it's my problem with the 2019 movie always has been, I just have the Joaquin Phoenix has built such a detailed character with Arthur Fleck. It's so hard for me to believe that that guy could ever become the Joker. I see Arthur Fleck doing his best to try to be someone else, but it's still Arthur under there, even in the 2019 movie. And at least this movie goes, the reason why that is because he was always Arthur all along. And I think that there is something interesting in this Elseworlds deconstruction meta commentary of the character that's saying, this was never the story of how Arthur Fleck became the Joker. This is the story of how Arthur Fleck introduced the concept of Joker to the city of Gotham and to the people of Gotham. And then in that way, the title Folie à Deux takes on a new meaning, because there has been this sort of shared psychosis or shared fantasy with Arthur and Lee the entire film. And now the Joker persona is infecting other, it's taking on a life of its own, and it's becoming a folie a however many people it's infecting. And you know, that guy that had did the car bomb at the courthouse, mm-hmm. he could be a version of the Joker. And this guy that shanks Arthur, he could be a version of the Joker. And this potentially unborn child that Harley might be carrying, this could be the Joker. This, you know, like, there's all yep. these like possibilities yep. of what it could be. And I think that as an Arthur Fleck sequel, that's interesting. And the way that we're wrapping up that story, we're sort of doing this like circular, there's a circular narrative is something that is used a lot in tragic comedies where your character ends at the exact place that they began. And that's what we are literally doing here. We started the first movie with him lying in the yeah. alleyway. We're ending it with him lying in the hallway, and he ends it where he began. I think that that's interesting. But in the world of Batman, I don't think that the Joker ever should be somebody who got the idea from somebody else.
Yes. It yeah. goes into what you talked about last week with sometimes knowing the origin of the character lessens his impact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I feel like too. It's like, oh, so the Joker just took it from somebody else. Like right. if this is Arthur Fleck, if Arthur Fleck inspired the Joker, like then that lessens that Joker to me. So totally. That Joker is not nearly as interesting because he just stole it from somebody else. So it's like, that's a little weird. So, you know, and
yeah, it's always going to be like, you're not the real Joker. Like yeah, you're not, yeah. you're just a copycat. You're just yeah. imitating the Joker.
Yeah. And I mean, in the comic books, I don't know this one exactly, but in a recent comic book, you know, Batman gets to some supercomputer that knows all, you know, everything or whatever. And he says, who is the real Joker? And they say, there are three. And there's like three separate Jokers. And then like, so there are multiple Jokers in the comics in some version of the comics, right? But it's still just, I don't know. This one just rubs me the wrong way. Cause I totally agree with you. I'm of two minds. In one way, it's very interesting. In the other way, I don't like it at all. And I lean more towards the, I don't like it at all, because it's kind of, it just doesn't, I don't, it just doesn't feel like the character. And I think that's what ultimately is so frustrating for
me. It also just feels, I think a valid feeling is like, it just kind of feels like we were just like tricked, like yeah. lied to. Like, it's just yep. like, you just kind of tricked me into watching these movies by telling me you were going to do a Joker origin story or a deep dive into the character yes. of Joker. But yes. this wasn't, and it never was your intention to tell me the yeah. story of the Joker. It was always, and the comedy of the two movies was, you were never watching a movie about Joker. You always were watching a movie about Arthur Fleck all this whole time. And I would even go as far as to say, in Todd Phillips' version, Elseworld version of Gotham City, I would go as far as to say, there is no such thing as the Joker. The Joker does not actually exist. Even this guy that kills Arthur in the hallway, it can't be the Joker that we, not the one from the universe. It just can't be. Like, there can't be a Joker who got the idea from some other guy. The Joker is a singular concept and is a person who is introducing a new, when the Joker emerges in the Batman world, he's bringing something new. In this world, if this Bruce Wayne that we see in the first movie, in the 2019 movie, if he grows up and becomes Batman and has to square off against the guy that shanks Arthur Fleck in the hallway, and that guy's wearing paint that looks like Arthur Fleck's paint, everybody in town's going to go, aren't you just doing that thing that guy Arthur Fleck did? And they'll know his name too. They'll be like, this is the Arthur Fleck thing. Like, he's a very yeah. famous.
Yep.
His trial was very famous. And he was, yeah. you know, so yeah. I think that what the joke winds up being of both movies is there, you came here for a Joker movie. Ha ha. It never was. And, yeah. and while that is frustrating, I think that is the word of these two films, frustrating and disappointing.
Yeah.
I can't get around the fact that it's interesting, and people sure are talking about it. And I think people are going to continue talking about it and debating it for a long time.
Yeah. I think the problem with that is though, that with this one, nobody's seeing it.
Right.
So
I think that retroactively that this movie's going to be I think this movie's going to continue to inspire a lot of dialogue
oh, yeah.
about,
oh, yeah.
you know, about genre and the character, and
it will live on as I don't know. Well, yeah, I think it'll be kind of like what we talked about. There will be two camps: some that love it and some that hate it. I think the people that hate it will continue to be in the majority.
Scores.
Let's get into it.
Let's get into scores so we can wrap this puppy up. If you don't know our podcast, we give scores for technical achievement, for rewatchability, for cultural significance, how well they stuck the ending, and our personal subjective scores. So technical achievement for Joker, Foley, this is going to be my highest score. Listen, it's high. I'm giving it an 8.
Okay. No, that's fair.
Yeah.
I gave it a 7. Because this is the thing, like, this movie is so beautiful, how it's shot. And again, I said this before, the score for this movie was really, really good. Not when they're singing, the actual score, orchestral score of the movie was really good. And I really, every time it came on, I was like, man, this is like, it sets the mood. It gets you back. Like, even they'll have a musical sequence, but then they'll come back and it totally sets you right back to where you are, which is like, this is depressing. And so that really did well. It looks beautiful. The fact that the theme is so heavy and it's very, it's apparent, but it's not like slamming you in the face. It's done very, very well. I think you're totally justified in giving it an 8.
The fact that that shadow storyline was subtle enough that you didn't even catch it. Cause I was watching it going, oh, I see that guy. And then later thinking about it going, oh, that was an interesting thing to have the shadow there. I didn't catch the fact that he's being chased by the guy. I was like, oh, that's cool too, that he's being chased by himself from the earlier.
Yeah.
So I think that this is the thing about this movie, is like the response to it makes it seem like it's, I hear the word messy a lot. It's a mess. And I go, I was even sitting there in the theater going, it's not a mess. Like, it's pretty like straight. It's pretty easy to follow. I don't watch this going, whoa, geez, the editing's all over the place. And it doesn't seem like he knows what he wants to do. I think that there are very valid criticisms about the execution. And I think that there are very valid criticisms about, like, what is Todd Phillips trying to do with these two movies at all?
Yes.
Like, why are you calling them Joker if you don't actually want to tell a story about Joker? You just want to, you know, I think that those are all very valid things. However, next to Greg Fraser's cinematography for Dune Part 2, I think that this is the best cinematography I've seen in a movie all year long. And I'm an image boy. Like, that is like that. For me, when I go sit in a movie theater, if I'm looking at something that is beautiful to look at, it makes up for a lot. And the fact that this is shot primarily practically, that there's very few visual effects in this movie, that everything's in camera, and that it looks as good as it does, that it's lit as well as it does, that the production design is this good. And then on top of that, you've got, again, another fantastic leading performance from Joaquin Phoenix. I do feel like Lady Gaga is doing her level best with what she's given here. I think that the character design, again, is good. The costume design is good. I think that there are a lot of very interesting concepts here. Where it loses points for me on the technical end is just on, like, some execution things as far as, like, how I think you could better execute the musical element.
Yes.
And just, you know, kind of the overall thing of, like,
I totally agree. I think points off because it's not as theatrical of a musical as it could be. Points off because it's not the character. It feels like it's cheap because it's not really the character that you're promising me.
Yeah,
but the this is the movie that Todd Phillips wanted to make, and he made it exactly how he wanted it.
Yeah,
it's not messy. It's not like Prometheus, you know, where it's kind of, you don't really know where you're going. You're setting up things that you don't really pay off. This is all very much exactly what he wanted. Kind of comes down to the execution and the frustration of not getting what you kind of put forward.
Yeah.
Not but really again, getting what you promised in some ways, not really completely promised, but, and again, it's two minds. I'm of two minds.
Yeah.
But you kind of told us what you're going to give us, but
I'm going to say my next point in our next thing. So rewatchability, what do you got for rewatchability?
Rewatchability, I said 3.
Okay.
Because I mean, it is long. you know, it's like the first one. I didn't like rewatching that movie. Mm-hmm. It's really good, but it's super sad and depressing, and like,
yeah,
it's hard to watch. I feel bad for him, you know, and also, you know, he's murdering a lot of people. This one too is just kind of like, all right, it meanders a little bit, but that was intentional, and it's slow, and it just gets really frustrating. So I don't really want to watch it again.
I think that's a completely fair score. And I think that a lot of people are going to feel, I think there's going to be a lot of people who go, I don't ever need to watch that movie ever again. I have kind of a belief that this movie is going to be one that like comic book movie fans and that cinephiles are going to rewatch for years to come. And it will be studied and talked about because of just how I got to commend Todd Phillips for really doing something truly original with such an oversaturated form.
Yeah.
As much as we are huge fans of the Batman universe and of those storylines, and as much as we have a certain way we like them to be delivered to us, I've got to give Todd Phillips credit for doing something here that is pretty original. And this is why I think that this movie, I give this movie a 7 rewatchability score.
Okay.
Because I think that people are going to keep coming back to it to investigate like what frustrates them about it, or, you know, is it as bad as I thought it was? And I also think that a big theme of the movie is unfulfilled expectations. There's an expectation that the world has of Arthur Fleck to fulfill their fantasy of what they think the Joker idea stands for. And there's an expectation that we in the audience have. So Harley and the Joker movement, they're kind of us saying we have a certain expectation of what we're looking for in a Joker movie. And we have an expectation of what we want Joaquin Phoenix to give us as the Joker. And the movie just refuses to give it to us. And it's because Arthur Fleck is not capable of giving it to us. And I think that exploring that as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, I think it's really worthwhile, and I think it's going to be something that people come back to and go, that's actually interesting that this movie is about denying me what I think I like my like. And I get it. It is frustrating to have those expectations denied and unfulfilled, but I also think that that's kind of what the movie is about, that like the reason why Arthur's story is so tragic is because the fantasy cannot be fulfilled. And that's why the movies are such a frustrating watch. But I think I think it will bring people back to them.
Yeah, you know, I'm in you saying that. I it's very valid what you're saying. I just wonder, you know, if somebody did this kind of thing to a Shakespeare character, you would probably have the same reaction. And it's hard because there is a lot of expectation that goes along with characters that so many people know and love, and sometimes when you don't, I mean, when you do something like this, I don't know. It's a weird, I totally agree. I think people will be talking about it for a long time, but I think no matter what, this isn't really the character that people wanted.
I think
for good or for bad, I think people will be upset with that.
I agree. I think in some ways what we just talked about with rewatchability is it bleeds into cultural significance. Like it's the same kind of thing. It's like, will this be something that people want to come back to and continue talking about and continue, because there's been a lot of talking about it just in the first week, but will it stay something that people want to talk about, or will it fade away? My score on that front is that yes, it will. And I gave it a 7. I believe that this will be something just for its sheer originality and its sheer like ballsiness, I think it will stay in the cultural conversation for better or worse. What do you think?
Yeah, I gave it a 6. Mainly the reason I think 7 is probably a good score, but the reason I gave it a 6 is because not as many people are seeing it.
Right.
And like we've talked about, it's a strange thing because people are like actively not seeing it because it's so negative. So I think it's a 6. But you know, honestly, as we go down the road, it could be talked about for, I think it will be talked about for a long time, but it'll be interesting to see.
You might be, I might be too high on that one. Ending. How do you feel like this is a very controversial thing about this movie.
Yeah.
The ending of the film is Arthur's not the Joker. There might not even be a Joker. He's dead. That's the end of this story. Yeah. Joke's on you.
Yeah. Well, what did you give it?
I give the ending of this movie, it's really hard for me to score this film because, again, I'm of two minds. So I'm putting the ending at like a 6.5 because as the ending to the Arthur Fleck story, I find it, I find aspects of it kind of brilliant. Yeah. And yeah. I even, as a deconstruction of the Joker idea, or I find aspects of it interesting.
Yeah.
But as just a like, hey, you made two movies with Joker and neither one of them gave me what I wanted. And then at the end of the movie, you said neither of these movies were actually about the Joker. And this guy that's in bad focus in the background, he's the Joker. I go, nah, that guy's not the Joker either. I don't like that. And so I'm of two minds. I'm giving the story that Todd Phillips wanted to tell, the Arthur Fleck story, I'm giving the ending of that story a 6.5. I would give the ending of a Joker sequel like this, I'd give it like a 2 or a 1.
But, yeah, I gave it a 2. I'm on on the other side. Yeah. And it mainly is just like, all right. Like, and I think a big part of that too is Harley Quinn. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's it ended very strangely. She was kind of wasted in a little, you know, in some ways, but also I'm speaking more from this side of that's not what I expected. And that's mm-hmm. not the character that I know. So it's, I feel cheated. So yeah. That's why I'm going with that side of my brain and giving it a 2.
Personal score, subjective score.
Subjective score. This is such a weird one to give 2 because I'm giving it more to my frustration. I gave it a 3.
Fair.
I feel more strongly that like this is not the character I was, and maybe, I mean, I keep saying expected, but that's kind of not the character that I was promised just from the title, from the trailers, from everything. It's really not the, even from the first movie. I mean, the first movie, they're not saying that he's not the Joker. They're saying this is could be the Joker. So then this one, they completely go against it and say, no, he's not the Joker. So I don't know. I went with the frustrated side. So I gave it a 3.
Fair. And I think the majority of viewers are with you, and it does feel like a massive bait and switch in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Again, my score here is I'm pulled in two directions with this movie. There's a version of this movie that I hate, and there's a version of this movie that I'm quite tickled by and quite interested in. And so I think I would sort of put myself, I'd put the score at a 5 for me because I'm pulled in two directions. And then I bump it to a 6 because I think I skew in the direction that I'm a little more interested in it than I am pissed off by it. Especially because, and I think the reason why my score differs from a lot of other people's is because I never really was on board with the first movie to begin with. I was always sort of like, there's things about the first movie I like, and there's things that I find to be kind of frustrating and kind of annoying. And then this movie sort of goes, well, hey, if I just take it as it's delivered to me, then it sort of fixes some of those things for me. It's like, oh, the things that bothered me about the first movie of him never quite feeling like the Joker, it's answered in this movie. The reason why that is because he never was. And so now I know I'm just watching a movie about this guy who's sort of being chased by this idea that's bigger than him. The Joker idea is sort of, you know, me and my shadow. And I'm like, that's kind of interesting and brilliant. And so I skew toward, in if I put my score dead center, I tilt it to the 6.
Tilt it to the right.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's good. And actually, the funny thing is, I feel the exact same way about the first movie as well. I wasn't into it. I didn't love it. But my expectations for this one, it's like now that you say that, my expectations for this one were like, all right, he's got to fully give into it, and I'm that's what I want. And then I didn't get it. But if I look at it the way that you did, which is like, well, it's not the Joker story. It is more interesting, but you lean to the positive. I lean to the negative. So
it really could go either way with a movie like this, but that's why at least it's not a movie where it's just like, wow, that's what's interesting about the audience response to this. And like the cultural response to this is people are treating it like it's the worst movie of the year. It's one of the worst movies in years. And I'm like, yeah, it's definitely more worthwhile than some of the stuff that gets made. And
completely agree.
Yeah. Well, there it is. There's Joker Folia. Let us know your thoughts, and you know, keep check out our other stuff. This podcast is we're getting rolling now. We're moving and grooving, and soon we'll have our own YouTube channel, I'm sure. So we'll keep you posted on the developments on that. And take it easy.
Yeah,
we'll see you next time.
Yep, we'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.